I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Danilo's free.
First time we've seen them attack them, and there's Brandon! Well, that's what I wanted to see Robinson do!
Taylor Wadi scores! And the city ground goes ballistic!
He's through here! And in the end, Forrest will say it doesn't matter how you play, as long as you win it!
Yeah!
Hello and welcome to this morning's edition of Red Side of the Trent, where we come to you shortly after Nottingham Forest 2-2 draw with Wolverhampton Wanderers at the City Ground. We have a full house today, so I'm joined by Reece Lane, Adam Wicklow and Lee Clark. And yeah, let's get straight into it, chaps. So, Reece, we'll start with you for the team. Obviously, very interesting omission of Anthony Elanga, who it turns out has picked up a minor injury, which naturally was a big blow before the game. Hopefully, he's back for next week. I think that's a general message that he should be in contention, at least, for Everton. But were you surprised that that was the only real change that seemed to be made?
Not really, to be honest. I know we've got our own personal views on some players in the side, should be swapped for some players on the bench, but was I surprised that Nuno picked that team with Elanga being injured? Not really, mate. I mean, I think most, well, not most fans, but some fans would probably argue Nico Dominguez needs to be in there. He wasn't, which wasn't a surprise to me. And yeah, I mean, that's all I can say about it, to be honest.
No, fair enough. I mean, I think that is the key of crux. I mean, we've been pretty fair. I think that most fans would be the same, that generally speaking, if a player has a bad game, they're normally expected to be out of the team the next week. And it's just funny how certain people seem to escape that sort of judgment. But we'll move on. Lee, we'll start with you. So, Forest started pretty well when we had a few chances. And, you know, it was quite a bright start, I thought, from Forest. But, obviously, we danced with fire a little bit when Murillo, who I keep seeing people sort of question his offensive output, but Murillo was on hand to keep what disabled off the line after what can only be described as car crash defending, basically. Talk me through that sort of isolated incident.
Yeah, I felt you might give me this one. Talk you through it. I mean, everything was going well until it went to a certain player that dares not be questioned. I mean, can you imagine if Sangare had done that? Yeah, it was just criminal defending. It was awful. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say. I think it was just one of those things where it was just a lazy, lazy pass from a player who we keep getting told doesn't make that sort of mistake, apparently. Yeah, it was just really, really lazy, really lackadaisical. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I saw there was actually people in the ground blaming Celts, and it's like, what else could he do? Where else was he going to pass that ball? Yeah, he could have maybe punted it, I suppose, but the pass was on. Again, I think if it's Sangare or even Dominguez making that pass, no one dares to question Cells. It's just kind of a get out of jail card for again, the player that we're not allowed to mention. So, yeah, I don't really know what else he was doing. And it happened a few times yesterday where we were in situations where there was an easier option on and it just wasn't executed right. But again, I'm not going to go too OTT with it. I just think he's that sort of player that sometimes, well, all the time, not sometimes, he just often makes the wrong decision. And it could have cost us yesterday. I mean, to be honest, I think what Murillo did was fantastic. I saw people before the game yesterday blaming moaning about his positional sense. I've never really thought that about Murillo. I think he probably could be better in the air, but I've never really thought his positional sense is in question. He's done that a few times for us, cleared things off the line and like a last-ditch attempt and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it was good defending. I thought the second one was an absolute sitter. I don't know how... Was it Sarabia that had the chance, the second one? I think that was an absolute sitter. Okay, I was just expecting the net to bulge, to be fair. But yeah, it was just... It just kind of summed up our season, that little passage of play, I thought.
Can I jump in, Christian? Sorry.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Do you know, the whole thing with that Yates pass, I mean, every single player in the Premier League more or less does not get that wrong. And then the fact that people don't really give him the criticism because he's come from the academy is laughable, because it's exactly the same situation with Turner, where we don't want to pass him the ball back because he's so inept with his feet. That does not fill me with confidence. And he's meant to be a Premier League central midfielder. And he got the most basic thing wrong, which is he's meant to be able to... That's meant to be his bread and butter. Passing is meant to be a midfielder's bread and butter. And he's got it horribly wrong with like the least amount of pressure, in my honest opinion. The Wolves player's not right up his backside. He's like coming in just to put a little bit of pressure on and he gets it horribly wrong. And then doesn't really like do anything to really like help and get back and rectify the situation. Just like kind of looks a bit gormless, in my honest opinion. But we'll move on.
I think the thing for me is... Sorry, Reece, I'll let you come in a sec. I don't get why he's played that pass blind. That's what I cannot understand. Like at any level of football, let alone Premier League football, he's not even looked. He just literally just banged it. And he's got like, you know, I couldn't believe it when Sales said it's an awkward pass from Sales. Like you said, like any other midfielder in Premier League will be expected to deal with that pretty comfortably. And like he's got a good 2 seconds before a Wolves player comes onto him. And I know 2 seconds sound like a lot of time, but in the Premier League, that's probably quite a fair bit. And he just plays it blind, doesn't even look. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was like self-sabotage. But, Reece, I'll let you interject before. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the highlights back, so it's Omar Badadeli who's got the ball first. So as he's about to pass back to Matt Sells, Sells points at Omar Badadeli to go wide, because to play out from the back in the Premier League, you play a triangle. So he's pointing because he knows, Sells knows he's going to play it to Yates, and Yates is then going to put it wide, and that's how you get out in the Prem. That's what's happened. Sells has played it. And the only reason why it's being classed as an awkward pass, it wasn't, is because of the player it's gone to. And that is a fact.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
And the Premier League midfielder, I'm sorry, has got that's just a simple routine ball for me. Like Adam said, he's hit the nail on the head. The Wolves player wasn't right up his arse. If you look at the screenshot like I sent in his group, he's probably one and a half yards. He's not tight to
him. He's got at least 2 seconds.
Where he can get his foot round and to hook it away. Yeah, and I think, the Murillo clearance, in my opinion, was absolutely sensational. Absolutely sensational clearance because the Wolves, I'm not sure who shot, the Wolves player who did shoot, he's put that right in the corner, and as soon as he hit it, I thought that's 1-0, and he just come out of nowhere and headed it off the line. And like Lee said, I'm not sure how they didn't score the rebound, because they could have took a touch really to put that in the net, because there was no one. I mean, when it come back out to the end, I thought, God, this is 1-0. And when it went wide, you're like, Jesus, what a let off that was.
No, definitely. Lee, I'm going to stick with you just because Forrest quite simply didn't heed their warning. And the opening goal from Cunha, I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's come from a simple like throw from the keeper, and like, yeah, it's an outstanding finish from Cunha. I'll give him his credit. Like, once he gets into the position where he can shoot, he's actually rattled that top corner. That's like, you know, stanch and stuff. But how has he got into the position where he can spin through two players. And so again, like, sorry to throw you under the bus here, because I understand that there's a very volatile response inevitably coming to the player that we're going to be in question. But I just, what is your thoughts to that goal? Because I for the life of me, I cannot understand why he's ran behind Cunha rather than close off the gap to the penalty area. My head can't compute why he's done that.
No, and Andy Oz couldn't compute it, could he? Because he had a real go at Yates afterwards. I've mentioned him. I just don't understand it. Why did he run behind him? You just cut the gap off. Like you just said, Christian, you cut the gap off. It's so straightforward. And do you know what really wound me up? This is Mr. Captain Fantastic. The captain, we've just conceded. He's just messed up. And Andy O's just had a go at him. What does he do? He stands there like a scorned child who's just been told he can't have his pocket money because he said a naughty word. He stood there and sulked. You know when Morgan Gibbs-White did something wrong yesterday? Even if it was his fault, he showed a bit of, you know me, I've said on this podcast before, I don't demand a captain that, you know, is constantly barking orders. Think of Paul McKenna, you think of Stuart Pearce, who's constantly kind of barking orders. I don't demand that sort of captain. What I do demand is a captain that takes some responsibility for what's happening on the pitch. He stood there like, you've got one of the youngest players in the squad who's had a bit of a go at him because he's just basically thrown him under the bus. He's not helped him in the slightest. And he stood there like a spoilt child. And for me, that's unforgivable. Can you imagine if any of our other central midfielders, any of our other players had made that mistake? There'd be an inquest. There'd be, oh, he's just not good enough. Get him out of the team. But all of a sudden, that's the second mistake in a matter of minutes for him. And it's not a one-off situation. It's not. It happens every single week. And I'm sorry, but if he plays for over half of the remaining fixtures, we are cruising to the EFL. And then he can be our captain every week in the EFL. He 100%. This might sound a bit dramatic. It might sound a bit of a rant. But he's just not good enough. That situation sums up, and the situation we've just spoke about with the pass, it just sums up that he's not good enough for this level. If you want to be, if you're playing Liverpool, if you're playing Man City, if you're playing Chelsea, if you're playing the Sky Big Six, get him in the team. He's a narc, he's a nuisance, like Carragher says. I totally agree. He serves a purpose as a squad player in that situation. When you're playing teams like Wolves, teams like Fulham, and people will say, oh yeah, we played Fulham the other week and he was amazing. He wasn't amazing. He just did his job. And you know what's going to happen? He'll come out of the team, Dominguez or Sangare will play, and it'll be, oh well, it's the job. He did okay, but it's his job. We're giving Yates credit for doing the very basic things, and it's absolutely laughable. There was two situations yesterday where he should have cost us for the first one. But he didn't. The second one, he did cost us. Why would you run behind a player in that situation? Where did he think Cunha was going to go? I can't even fathom. Let's move on. I just can't even kind of sum up what he was trying to do. I just didn't get it all. I thought, actually, Omar Bamidele defended him really well. And I just think he needed a bit of assistance to kind of cut off, if he did manage to kind of shake him off and cut inside. He just needed someone standing that gap, like you said, Christian, and I just don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was doing at all. And it's like I've said it before, he runs a lot. He runs a lot into areas where we don't need him to be. And he does it all the time. And it's not the first time it happened, and yesterday it cost us. So.
No, I agree. I think Adam and Reese are very hot on the buzzer to come in here.
I think me and Reese are going to say the same thing, that Omar Bamidele can't be blameless in that situation. Because like we said before off air, like he does allow Cunha to come in a little bit too easy. But I think what Lee's trying to say is he's probably seen Yates and gone, well, I'll let Cunha come in early because I've got an extra man to come and cover me.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's what he's for. I don't know. Which it does seem a bit stupid to say that, but maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I don't think he's done a lot wrong. I agree, Andy. I think with Lee, sorry, I don't think he's shown him down the line. Like, realistically, if Yates closed that gap to the penalty area, the best Cunha can get from that is a corner. The very best he can get from that is a corner, because you've got nowhere to go. He has to go either backwards he's playing towards like the bottom end of the main stand or towards the Trent end. The best he can get is a corner, or he has to go backwards. But if you give him that chance, just oh, you know, thanks. Cheers, mate. I'll just run into the penalty box. What's the worst that can happen? I cannot get my head around how bad that is from a defensive standpoint. That is atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. It wouldn't matter if that was a League Two player that did that. You call for their heads. I want him subbed there and then for doing that, something that stupid. But of course, no, he bleeds red and white, so we can't say anything. Oh, just joke. Absolute joke. Sorry, Race. I'm sure you probably want to echo what Adam just said.
It's just the build up to it. Like, you know, Yates is jogging back. He's got to be full on sprinting to get back. Kuna's got his back to goal, right? And Omobadadeli's behind him. The only place he can go is to turn, right? So Yates has either got to basically get up tight to him, so it's a 2-on-1 situation. He isn't getting by with brutal force, or as soon as he turns, which is like in that situation, kind of a Cruyff turn into. As soon as he turns, Yates is there to basically tackle him. Instead, he got himself that badly positioned, he ended up nearly fouling him, and he had to let him go. And it just reminded me of the Worrell Froehlich against United in the Cup last season with Rashford. It's a 2-on-1 situation. They should never, it's a great finish, like you said, Christian. They should never be scoring from that situation. Someone has got to take responsibility there. And to be, like Lee said, really, it's your captain coming over. You've got to take responsibility and just quash that situation. I mean, as a defensive midfielder, I mean, I'm not obviously played at the level, but I can read the game and that. That just seemed a simple, nice tackle for CDM, that for me. Yeah, add that to your stats. Yep.
Nice no one, problem. Yeah. And happy days.
Just so frustrating. The goals we concede, and I know we'll come on to the second one later, but you just look at the goals we concede every week and you're like, you know, it's the same goal. It's either a set piece, it's either a mistake. It's just
infuriating. Like I said on
last week's pod, we won't keep another clean sheet this season because we're just defensively inept at times. In moments, you know, sometimes we defend well in periods. We actually defend in periods pretty well. It's in moments where it's just so inept. We just get punished at this level. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's infuriating and painful. But Adam, we'll move on to something a bit more positive because we actually did a bit of a, obviously there was a solar eclipse around America earlier this week. I'm sure you've seen. We had our own version of a solar eclipse and Nottingham Forest scoring a set piece goal. And obviously you can argue that Saar could do a bit better with it, but it was quite nice to see a corner beat the first man. And Gibbs White caused the heart or blood pressure for a lot of Wolves fans to spike significantly with his celebration. But talk me through the goal. What did you think of it?
Who would have thought the key to scoring set pieces was having Morgan Gibbs-White actually in the box rather than taking them? But no, I thought Gio Reyna was pretty good on set pieces yesterday. I mean, we didn't really mention him in the starting lineup. I was actually quite surprised he started because Divock Origi seemed to have got like some sort of got Nuno wrapped around his little finger of sorts. But no, I thought Reyna did pretty well for however long he was on for, 75 minutes or whatever. But no, it was a great corner. Gibbs White, we know he's pretty good actually in the air. He's very he can jump really high. Good contact, gets it down into the ground. And I mean, yeah, I think from a Wolves perspective, they'll be kind of a bit upset with that one because you've let a fairly smaller player score when they've got quite a tall bloke. Like, Morgan Gibbs-White's like two Max Kilmans. It's like he's got to be two of him to be one Max Kilman. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. And I think Saar would be a bit disappointed that it's gone past him pretty easily as well. But no, good from our point of view because we don't score many from set pieces. So, yeah, good. And then obviously Gibbs-White giving it to his old firm. So, yeah.
That's decent. Funny. It was so funny seeing them play like the sort of like victim card on Twitter afterwards. Like, oh, why the Stafford boy against his former club that gave him his great opportunity? Like, why would he celebrate in front of them? It's like, oh, okay, we just completely ignore the fact that, you know, your fans
you abused him
bad.
And his family.
You abused his family, he's got, the abuse his fiance's got. Like, I mean, he's going to ignore all of that because, you know, you're slightly upset he's put his fingers in his ears. Like, yeah. Grow up. Like a bunch of spoilt children, them. Honestly,
I miss that. But I miss that needle in the game as well. Like, I'm all for ex-players celebrating against their teams if like, they've had a hard time.
I kind of agree. That's why I found it so bizarre when Wood got his hat-trick at Newcastle. I kind of get the first one, you don't celebrate. Okay, fine. I mean, they hated him anyway, but fine. The second and the third, come on, man. Like he's got a hat-trick. Like, they just do something other than just go like that. Like, dearie me. It's just a modern trend, I suppose, isn't it? But
yeah,
Lee, because obviously you've been dealt the short straw, I'll give you a rather larger straw now, and we'll shake the order up somewhat. I'll give you the second goal because I thought Forrest started again very well. I think I can't remember the Reina chance where Hudson-Odoi picks him out before or after the goal, but I'm going to mention it anyway because that was an example of Forrest playing pretty well. But it was just wonderful interplay from Forrest between Danilo and Gibbs-White, and yeah, and I think you sort of alluded in the chat actually the composure Danilo shows, bear in mind that ball could have gone anywhere, was fantastic.
Yeah, it's why he's in the team. I think Danilo, since he came back into the team, has been really, really good. But yeah, it was just one of those sort of finishes where, because it kind of, I think if it not fell to him, I think there'd have been a small appeal for a penalty, but I think he did get the ball, to be fair, the Wolves player. But it was nice to actually see us get a bit of luck in the box, because just lately, we've not been kind of getting those little, you know, where kind of things bobble around. And then it just kind of fell to Danilo. And he was just in a position where he just had to take one touch and compose himself. And for a young player who's kind of, you know, we've seen what he did last season when he was scoring. You know, I think he went on a run of 3 or 4 games where he scored. But yeah, it was just such a composed finish. I think it would have been easy in that situation to kind of, because he probably wasn't anticipating the ball, it would have been easy for him to just kind of be rash and make a wrong decision. But it was good how he got it under his control and then just kind of made the decision to sweep it past the keeper. Yeah, it was just a really composed finish, and that's what he brings to the team. I think we've said on this podcast before that Danilo's kind of, he's got the Mangala syndrome a bit this season, hasn't he, where people can't really decipher what sort of midfielder he actually is. And I think it just lately he's been showing that he can kind of do bits and bobs at both ends of the pitch. So long may it continue. I think it's good that we're sharing the goals around. And yeah, it was just a really composed finish. I think if Gibbs-White scores that, you're adding another 10 million onto his valuation, aren't you, because it's him. But yeah, it was just a really composed finish, and it was just really nice to see us get that rub of the green in the box.
No, definitely. It was lovely football from Danilo. And I think, like, there's been a few players since Danilo's come in that have really sort of, I know obviously April Danilo is a bit different, and he sort of just becomes a different player and stuff. Like, his abilities grow tenfold. But I do think that, like, especially recently, him, Williams, and of course Wood especially, and the Nuno have really sort of shone, which is obviously very beneficial for Nottingham Forest. But Reece, I'll come back to you for the goal, because it seemed like, much like the Spurs game, see, they made a few changes and we got caught cold. Huang especially immediately like started causing Forest serious problems. I mean, that penalty shout was nothing, of course. It was just, but the fact that he, you know, got past it at Moreno to begin with was quite concerning. And then lo and behold, obviously, they get the corner, and it's just so frustrating, because at 2-1, I thought, okay, you know, we've really dug in deep. We didn't deserve to be losing anyway. We've dug in deep. We've got ourselves back into a winning position. And once again, the Achilles heel strikes. And as you were saying before off air, just a complete mess defensively from about 6 different players.
Yeah, I think that Huang one was outside the area, wasn't it? It looked live in the ground anyway. But like you say, Christian, there's nothing out. Yeah, just, and again, it's just a time scale, isn't it? It's 5 minutes after we've gone ahead. You know, we're not even like really stopped celebrating, and we're back level kind of thing, isn't it? Yeah, as you just said, Christian, as I said off air, it's just an absolute mess of a goal, that one. And it's just an absolute, it's the kind of goal you'd probably see on a Sunday league pitch where it's bundled in, I think is the best phrase to describe it. I mean, the ball's come in. I mean, at first, there's a free header. I mean, kind of like on the edge of the area. I mean, it looks like Chris Wood's probably the closest player to that. That's not been won. It's then been headed. It's a good first header, to be fair. It's a good first contact, because it's headed into an area where it's going to cause problems, and it does. And then, you know, a second Wolves player goes for a header. I'm not sure if he gets any kind of touch on it or a glance. Sells then completely flaps at it, I'm afraid. And then you know, it's just bundled in. You know, Danilo's got hold of Kuna and he bundles it in, I think, through Murillo's legs. I mean, as I said to you, when it gets headed in from the first contact, that little tiny phase around the goal line, outfield players, we're outnumbered. There's three Wolves players and two Forest players in that little phase, and we're defending the set piece. I mean, as I've said, we've all said, set piece wise, it's just completely. I think it was Hodgie or Brian Laws after the game saying it needs to improve. Well, yeah, we know it needs to improve because it can't get much worse. We're the worst team in the league at defending set pieces, but it isn't improving. We've said it all season, and it just isn't going to improve this season. As I've said, we're just going to have to try and. I can't just see us keeping a clean sheet, and we're just going to have to hope, like I said in the last pod, that as forward players on form. I mean, we scored another two goals at home yesterday and still not won the game. So, I mean, I just did a bit of looking at the stats since, and this was under Cooper as well. All competitions and Nuno, two clean sheets in 21 games. And you got to factor into that, there's four games against EFL opposition in there. And we kept a clean sheet out of one of them four. You know, and then we've had four clean sheets all season. For example, the only three teams who are worse than us clean sheets-wise are the three who are below us, Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United. For example, next week's opponents, who are the next team above us, have kept more than double clean sheets than us. They've kept nine in the Prem alone. So, you know, that is going to be, if we do go down, that is the reason why we're going to go down. It's as simple as that. We just cannot defend them moments. And like I said earlier, them it gets to being defensively inept. And, you know,
I think
I didn't think Wolves, apart from the two chances, did Sells really make a save yesterday? Of no, I can not really.
Apart from the time we played in trouble.
Yeah, apart from Kuna, did any Wolves player really threaten us going forward? Not really. It's just so frustrating. It's as simple as yesterday. It was 2 points drop. It was a game we should have won, and it's a game we didn't capitalize on winning. And you know, it leaves us in a precarious position again because we all expected Luton to get tanked yesterday. They did get tanked. It would have been a brilliant chance for us to have that 3-point buffer again. And unfortunately, it's only at one where, you know, you look at next week's fixtures, Luton could set their stall out by beating Brentford before we play, us and Everton play. It's concerning. Yesterday was a massive missed opportunity, I'm afraid.
There definitely is no way around it. Yeah, I think what's more annoying is that obviously Nuno was asked after the game about conceding from a set piece, and his verbatim quote, "It's an ongoing situation this season and it is an issue, so it's normal that it's spoken about. An easy situation to solve." Well, why haven't you solved it then?
Yeah, but he's had 21 games to solve it.
Exactly. Why haven't you solved it then?
The club appointed Steve Cooper appointed a set piece because, I mean, that's another conversation as we've just chatted on the pod before, but apparently he isn't using this guy. So what are we doing in training to combat these issues? Because it's 21 games and we're still no better.
It's
the reason why, like I said, it's the reason we're going to get relegated if we do. That is the
main
reason.
It will be one of the reasons, yeah. I mean, obviously we haven't helped ourselves by playing a point deduction for half season.
But
it's definitely one of the reasons, yeah.
In January, like, we've resolved that issue. This is an ongoing issue throughout the whole season, which we've not resolved at all. And, you know?
Yes, Paul.
Every time we concede a set-piece goal, you just think, why do I bother? Because, you know, are the club like thinking this is like a laugh or something? Because it's just been happening all season. We've done nothing at all to combat it, and you think to yourself, what are we doing in training to combat it? And then you get that, you know, you get that quote from Nuno. You just think, you know, is everyone having a laugh kind of thing? You know, we're in a relegation battle here. We're just like laughing about it every week. It's a farce, and we're against a side next week who prey on set piece goals.
That's the worry, isn't it? Yeah.
Everton
are abysmal, and you can just see it coming now that it'll be a set piece goal probably done undoes us
probably
in a massive game.
I
just wonder a little bit with the quote that Nuno said. I just wonder if he's kind of saying it's an easy situation to sort. I don't think he's kind of again, I don't want to sound like I'm defending the indefensible here, but I genuinely think with that, he's kind of maybe piling a bit of pressure on the players to say, you're good enough to do it, so start doing it, rather than it being a quote that like, oh, I've not sorted it yet. I think he knows that it's an easy situation. He's probably seeing it in training day in, day out, where they're doing some good stuff when it comes to set pieces, but then they're not putting it into practice on match day. I just wonder if it's the sort of quote that he's kind of used as, you know, right now it's your turn. You need to start showing it on a match day. I don't know. You just never know with these. But, I don't know.
But like they said on Radio Nottingham, if that is the case, go back to man marking, and then you at least know who's accountable for the player. I mean, look at the second guy state. Look at the market. It's just a mess. There's just nobody kind of knows who's played who. It's just such a mess. There's like three or four chances of players just escaping, and it was a Sunday league goal, that second one.
We're just really waiting for Ashton Kutcher to come out and say you've been punked, kind of thing, aren't we? But my issue is we haven't got a set piece taker that's good enough. So how are we even like practicing defending players who can take a corner or a free kick?
Danilo's was good yesterday. There was one he put in second half, which is he advanced at the back post where someone was coming in. If someone was coming in, they just tapped it in.
The other issue, isn't it, Rhys? We're not very good at attacking them, even though we did score from one yesterday. We're crap at attacking them as well.
The ball's only as good as the person it's there to finish it. Now, that Danilo when it bounced, I was like, wow, what a corner that was. Mm. Someone's coming in back post, should have just tapped it in for an easy goal, but unfortunately, there's no one there.
We're at apparently 22 goals from set pieces in 33 games, which, according to a random pundit on Twitter, is 37.5% more than the second worst team at defending set pieces in the league.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is what annoys me when I get Nuno coming out and saying, like, oh, yeah, it's an easy fix. Well,
that's why I'm saying go back to man marking, because that's back to basics. And you, like I said, you can make players then accountable. He's your man. You've let him run, so it's your fault. Not this zone where it's just Wolves are running everywhere and we're all looking at one another, like, whose man's which? That second goal just looked confused, the team did to me. No one knew who was picking up who.
It's just a mess. Total mess. But Adam, I mean, despite the fact it being a total mess, Forest could and probably should have still won the game with the chances that we had. I mean, there was the one that Hudson Odoi had. I mean, if he gets a bit more loft on that, he probably does enough to chip Sarr. Obviously, we recycled that chance. It goes to Danilo. Sarr makes a very good save. That's going top corner otherwise from on the nose, weaker foot as well. But the big one for me was like, what's Origi again? Like, can we just cancel his loan, please? For the love of God, just cancel his loan. Like, what does he offer us? Like, why does this experiment keep happening? He's crap. We know he's crap. Like, how has he got that pass so badly wrong to Woods? We hammered Yates earlier. Oh, sorry, he who must not be named, number 22. We hammered him earlier for playing a blind pass. Like, Origi's done exactly the same thing. Like, I mean, but in complete different situation. I cannot understand how. No, it's a very simple ball across the box. I just can't do it with these bad players anymore. Like,
you should have shot.
Throw him into he is in the Dimitri and Diakabi category of poor, shambolic Forest loan signings now. He is atrocious. Whoever signed that transfer off, honestly, and I know exactly you think he wouldn't have come from Cooper. He wouldn't have come from Sirianos. It's definitely come from, you know, someone else at the club who loves a marquee signing. Didn't want Batshuayi, and we end up getting him instead because he's a marquee player. Just grow up. Like,
just say his name, Christian.
Like,
just say his name, Christian. Marinakis Jr. Fucking stop. Sorry, I'm sore.
It's a special idea on the last day of the transfer window. We know they love it.
How stupid you have to be on deadline day to go, you know what would really help our team? Divock Origi. Like, what thought process do you come to in order to come to that conclusion? Like, how mentally deranged are you for that to be an actual thought? Like, at what point? Like, just pack up and go home if that's the case, honestly. Like, that's one of those ideas. Like, it comes about in the fifth hour of a five-hour meeting where you're just, like, scrambling for oxygen and someone goes, Divock Origi. Like, and it showed yesterday because what is he doing? Adam, just please tell me, what is he doing? Because I've had it. I can't do it anymore. If he goes on a pitch anymore, I'm going straight to the concourse. I can't watch that clown play football for us anymore. It's an absolute joke. What a fucking competition to play for us. Sorry, I've sworn again. But...
this pod's gone out the window, hasn't it, now? We've all lost our heads. I don't know, mate, to be honest. He did it the other week as well. I think, who did we play? Was it Palace or someone else? Fulham, yeah.
That's what he should have done, though. He should have shot. He didn't need to pass that. He should have shot.
I mean,
story.
Yeah.
Taking out some kid in Trent and Lower? Great.
I mean...
Yeah, but I generally would have rather been shot and put it wide and did what he did.
Yeah.
Because the ball was that bad.
I mean, my mate mentioned to me, I think, like, if he does pass it to Wood's offside. Personally, I think Wood might be thinking, well, he's either drilling this towards goal, and if it comes off the keeper, I don't know if Lee might be able to tell me otherwise. I don't know if Wood's still technically in an offside position, but if he taps home after it's come off the keeper, I don't know. I think he is offside, isn't he, Lee?
Well, it'd have to be... You've got to be onside when the original shot comes in.
Right, so he'd have been offside, basically.
I've actually just watched Match of the Day before we came on it, and I actually think it would have been... I'm not sticking up for Origi. I agree with everything that Christian just said. Just rip his loan up. But I genuinely think Wood might have been offside. Just because it was a forward pass, and it would have needed to have been a forward pass. I do think he probably would have been close to being offside, but that doesn't excuse the awful execution of what he tried to do.
Yeah, so I have no idea. I mean, I'd rather Joe Gardner come and play, who come on again in the FA Cup against Bristol City. At least, you know, like he's going to be here in the long term as an academy player rather than Origi. I mean, yeah, waste of space. He's been a waste of space. Yeah, Ribeiro.
That's a lovely pass for Ribeiro to put Origi through in the first place.
Yeah, like... I mean, nice little cameo from him. But again, he's been a pointless loan signing because he's an 18-year-old kid and we're in a relegation scrap. And unless you're exceptionally talented, you're either not going to be at our club or you're not playing. Do you know what I mean? It's very strange.
I think we've actioned is, or according to Athletic anyway, he's going to be a permanent signing. So
why aren't we playing him?
That's it. Why aren't we playing him? Yeah, why are we giving Origi minutes? Again, it's come down to the manager, unfortunately.
How much was he? Is it going to be 8 million or something? So we're going to spend that on him if we go down, are we?
Yeah.
It just seems. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have minded that sign if we're actually going to play him odd times. It's just been not even been in the squad. I think that's his third sub appearance yesterday. I bet he's not even played combined a half for us yet.
I feel sorry for him a little bit because it's not his fault. Like he's had an opportunity to come to Forest from Sport in Lisbon and actually get maybe I'll get some minutes there, and he's getting cascaded aside for an overpaid oath. In the best respects, really. I mean, yeah, Origi has not impressed me whatsoever. He does flicks and tricks in like stupid positions. I know Gibbs White does it, but he does it like all the time.
Well, Gibbs White, that's a difference. Gibbs White does it well. When he does a flick,
the other guilty chance, I think, as well for us was one from Hudson-Odoi where Morgan Gibbs-White scooped it over the top of their defence, and I don't know why he's tried to take a touch. Just shoot. If he shoots, he's probably scores. He should know the keeper's going to be coming and closing the gap down Hudson-Odoi, and he doesn't inevitably. And yeah, like I've titled the pod today, it's just missed opportunities everywhere. I mean, I think our XG was just under two goals, which I know we scored two goals, but I mean, Nico Williams could have had a hat trick on another day. It's just so infuriating because we have actually been all right in front of goal this season, and we've spread the goals around a little bit more. But yeah, just rubbish. Origi it summed it up really. It summed his season up as well because he's just been an absolute disaster. I mean, we could probably do a pod on bad loans and bad signings. It'd probably take us about 2 weeks as well. We've had that many.
24-hour live stream, let's go.
Just to finish like on Origi, I mean, the game he came on and did really well in was the Villa away game. But what it is for me is when you're in this relegation battle, you know, he's never been in that type of battle in his whole career, has he? And there was a point yesterday where Gibbs-White got on his back because he just wasn't like prepared to run. and you're bringing on a player on big wages who knows he's not going to be here next season, he won't give a toss if Forest go down.
No.
You know, he's just been, he'll just be on his CV as he was a bit part player for us who's hardly had a chance. That's what he'll go down as. And it, Gibbs White was like having a go at him. It's just a lack of effort for me. And, you know, I know you guys just said he should have, the pass, he should have just shot for me. He generally should have just shot. It was a perfect, he was coming in from an angle. And like you just said, Adam, if he would have shot and Saar makes a save down low, Wood probably would have come in and tapped it in. And then it goes to VAR, doesn't it, if he's offside or not. But at least you can say, look, he's made the keeper work. He fathomed the chance because the ball from Ribeiro was absolutely superb. That was a good wide pass.
Mm. Beautifully weighted. Yeah, brilliant ball. But unfortunately, that's all she wrote and it finished 2-2. So before we get into any more trouble, we're going to move on to some slaps on it for us.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Red side of the Trent. Slept on it thoughts.
We'll start with Sam, who says, I'd have Origi's the firing squad, and quoted me in that one. So yeah, I'm glad other people see the same way. Thoughts of a really good performance from the team. Corner's much better. Danilo man of the match for me. Dominguez was very good coming on. Just needs to be that little bit more clinical. We'll be fine. Premier Edit says, if Aguirre was 80 million, the Murillo is worth much more. Hope we can keep Ribeiro as a promising young talent. Today's fact is that in 1934, a man called Fearless Egbert did the wall of death with a lion in a sidecar. He's posted a picture. It's actually a genuine lion. I mean, I hope it was called Tibbles or something. But Yummy Bear said, 2-2, did more than enough to win the game again. Scored when defending from set pieces again, but showed resolve to come back from 1-0 down, and Luton's goal difference has taken an absolute battering. Everton game next week is now basically the season. Win and I think we'll be fine. Tom Newton says, definitely 2 points lost. Game management and set pieces run hand in hand, as we're crap in both. We got ourselves into a great position, and yet again, our inability to defend a set piece and manage a game bites us on the arse again. Story of our season. Snowboard Pete says, it's deja vu, 2 points lost. Considered from a set piece again, missed opportunities again. Mourinho's just brilliant. That goal line clearance is something else. In my opinion, Yates got in the way for their first goal. Had enough of Origi, brings zero to the pitch in the team. BCP says 2 points drops. If we had a bit more quality, attacking and defending, we would have won this game. Huge game now versus Everton. Osh Jones says, if we do stay up, we really are limping over the line, like 10 metres out, falling over and crawling on our knees over it. Lucky this bottom three are so dire, and even Luton still might overtake us. Everton is massive. Alex, friend of the pod, said, I think it's that's a prefix now, isn't it? Friend of the pod, Alex. Can't be asked if Yates starting anymore. Too many draws. I think we'll be fine. This team aren't giving us much confidence to go on. Emma Woodward has said, too late in the season to be satisfied with 90 minutes of slogging and looking like the better team to come away without all 3 points. Like Dominguez, Reina and Aina back in. Gibbs White, Marino and Danilo will stand out. Danilo has got a mistake in him, but seems to be settling more and more. Reese Coy says positives. We bettered Luton result in that the final five games we stay up. We scored from a corner. Negatives, another set piece goal, and Yates still somehow starts a game. This isn't an agenda now. This is costing us. Desire does not make a footballer. Ability does. Frank the Tank says just not good enough. Players, the fans have a bias about how good some of these players are. If this was any other season, we'd be down already. But with the teams that came up, we're stealing a chance amazingly. I hope we can stay up, but I don't think even the team believe it. It's a bleak one. Grant Fellows says, decent performance, but again, the soft underbelly has cost us another win. Origi is not going to come good. Tavares looked like he'd never played before. And we're ending a positive one with Mark Baker. Played well and deserved the win. If only we could defend the set piece. Please, can we stop the Origi experiment and never play him again? There are undiscovered tribes in the Amazon who have never seen, let alone heard of football, that could offer more than him. Well, I think we can all agree on that one, generally speaking. But Thanks as always for getting your slept on it thoughts in. We'll now look at some player performances. So, Reece, I'm going to start with Gio Reyna for you. Reece, you're very correct. We did get a private slept on it thoughts sent into us. So, while you deliberate about Gio Reyna, I'll read that one out. Obviously, we do take that into account as well. This is from Dan, who says, the collective failure to address the set piece issue is an absolute disgrace and so unprofessional. I just don't know how this has been allowed to happen. It's probably going to send us down. He's going to send us down. It probably has after today. It's not unrealistic. We don't win another game all season. Good performance, but that's irrelevant at this stage. You win games with getting the basics right in both boxes, and this squad has not been able to do that all season. That won't change in the last five games. Also, only four goals scored beyond 80 minutes all season, which is less than Sheffield United. Pathetic. That's a good point, actually. But, anyway, Reece, Gio Reyna.
Yeah, just to touch on that last point, you do feel like when it is in the last 10 minutes of a game, because Wolves are sat back late on as well, you do feel like we're never kind of going to score late, don't you? You just get that feeling in the ground. But Gio Reyna, I thought he did okay. I'm not going to go into the social media of either was absolutely incredible, absolutely dreadful. I thought he was okay. The shot he had, he was quite unlucky, but to be fair, he should have slipped Chris Wood in because Wood was clean in, really. He was unlucky. It was a decent strike, but if you watch back the highlights, he had a real ample opportunity to slip Wood in and he would have been one-on-one. But he did do okay. I must say, I think not having Alanga did affect the balance of the team a bit because you kind of got sheer pace and on both wings. I'd say Reyna is a bit more of a technical player than sheer pace, isn't he? So I did think that affected the balance a bit because, to be fair, I thought Nelson Semedo, who is also very quick, I thought he dealt very well with Hudson-Odoi yesterday, aside from the chance, what we spoke about, where he probably should have scored. So, yeah, I thought he did okay for someone who's not really played much for us. I mean, you'd have to say, really, at the minute, it's kind of a low move. What's not worked out, has it? Because what has he played for us? Not many times at all, has he?
No, he's got assists, I suppose. I mean, he's been a handy player.
He got the assist, didn't he, which was good from a corner for probably one of our smallest players to stoop header in as well. And I think Saar got his hands tied up, did to try to keep that one out. But I thought he did okay. Probably, I'd say, with the assist, maybe 7 out of 10, 6.5, 7 out of 10, personally.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. Lee, I'm going to give you his other winger in Callum Hudson-Odoi, who I thought just didn't quite get rubber green yesterday, but still played largely all right.
Yeah, he's quickly become one of my favourite players, to be fair. One thing I've always liked about Hudson-Odoi is when he gets the ball, he's very direct. It's almost like his first thought is to get in that box because he knows that the defender can't touch him then. Like, you've just hit the nail on the head. It didn't quite work for him yesterday. There was one chance in the second half where I felt he should have just hit it first time, and he kind of, I think Gibbs White actually had a bit of a go at him. I don't know if he was trying, you know, basically saying just shoot, but he tried something a bit cute, and I think Saar made a save and it ended up with a corner or something. But yeah, he like you say, it just didn't quite work for him yesterday. But he was still, he's what I like about him is he doesn't let bad things kind of go against him. He doesn't knock his confidence. He always seems to want the ball. He always shows for the ball, even if it's not quite working. He just basically anticipates that the next time he might get a bit lucky and do something good. So, yeah, one thing I would say is it's nice to see him getting a run of games again. I think with the injury that he's had with his Achilles, I think it's probably playing on his mind a little bit. And he is the sort of player into it. Every time he goes down injured, you kind of think, oh, God, is this something serious? But it's probably just a mental thing for him. He's probably just needs that run of games to kind of click into full, you know, top gear again. So, yeah, I thought he was okay. It wasn't his best performance, but it certainly wasn't his worst either. So, yeah, it was just nice to see him get another run in the team. And, yeah, long may it continue with him. Because I think if he's fit and he's available, I think he's the sort of player that's got to play. When he wasn't playing a few weeks ago and he was on the bench here and there, that's no good for a player like Hudson-Odoi. He needs to be in the team. He needs to be getting these minutes. And, yeah, I firmly believe that for £3 million, I think he's probably the standout of our summer business. Like I've said on Twitter this week that this recruitment bashing, it always seems to rear its head when we're in poor form, which when we're in the Premier League seems to be all the time. But I just think, like we've said before, to get him for £3 million, I think that's an absolute steal. And yeah, long may his form continue, because he's always bright, he's always positive, and he always looks to do something, you know, that's essentially going to lead to a goal. So yeah, I thought he was okay. I thought probably like a 7, like Reece said about Rainer, probably like a 7, 7.5 out of 10. Nothing spectacular, but he did his job pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. I really like Hudson Odoi's football. I think you're right about his mentality as well. It's very much like, you know, you hear like very good strikers talk about it, and they said like they'd much rather be in a team where they're missing chances than, so if you're missing like 3 or 4 chances a game, they'd rather have that than have like one chance and miss it, for example. Because at least they know, they trust themselves that they will eventually get it right. And it feels that way with Hudson Odoi. It just feels like, okay, that didn't come off, I'll try again next time. That didn't come off, I'll try again next time. And I really admire that about him. I think he's a really good signing, though. I'm really happy that we've got him at Forest. I think that it's quite nice. I mean, obviously, we haven't really got a structured spine as such, but I do feel there are parts of the team that are sort of nailed in. I like to think he should really be that front three. He should always be, barring injury, Hudson Odoi, Gibbs White, Alanga, and because that's the best we've got. And it's really when in full motion, like it was against Fulham, it's really exciting to watch. So yeah,
I think as well. Just finally, I think he's one as well that I sometimes have a bit of there's a lot of talk on, like Reece said, it's not the gospel, but on social media, there's a lot of, oh, there's no fight. But I think with a player like Hudson Odoi, when things don't go right for him, you can tell he's suffering. I don't necessarily buy this there's no fight thing with a lot of players, and Hudson Odoi definitely dispels that theory. I think he's he always looks like a bit like Joe Lolley used to. He was a winger who always tried stuff and it didn't always work, but he always looked like he cared. And I genuinely think Hudson Odoi fits that mantra as well.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, definitely. And Adam, sorry to chuck a grenade your way, but you are going to get number 22, I'm afraid. Because I know you've been very eager to give your thoughts on his performance.
I'm going to let it blow up and create a crater now, then, aren't I? So, oh God, where do I start? I mean, the fact that he gets dragged after like 55, 60 minutes says it a lot. The one thing that gets like the counter argument from a lot of people who are admirers of Yates, and don't get me wrong, we've all had our very polarizing opinions of him this season. We've said he's been brilliant, we've said he's been absolutely rubbish, we've had it at both ends of the scale, is the fact that okay, well, managers keep picking him. I don't know what he's doing in training to get picked, so inevitably you have to put some sort of like blame as well on management, don't you? Because they have kept picking him. I don't know if that's because of his lack of leadership or what, but Dominguez came on yesterday and looked like he changed the game immediately. Got on the ball, kept it neatly, can pass, can go forward. It allowed Danilo to get a bit forward, a bit more, even like he did for his goal. It really baffles me how he gets in the team every week. And I'm like, I don't know, and you can, both things can still be true. You can still not like a player but also still praise them when they've done well. Do you know what I mean? I just don't like him as a footballer. I like to think I'm a purist. I like to play football on the ground. I like those technical players like Xavi, Iniesta, Rodri, etc. in the Premier League as well. And he can't do it. He's not capable. I looked at the Championship, I looked at the top 10 teams, centre midfielders. He doesn't get in any of their teams. They're all way better than him. He's not better than any Premier League midfielder, and that goes for Luton and Sheffield United, because Ross Barkley is better. The lad who plays next to Ross Barkley is better. Luke Berry, Jordan Clark, whoever, they're better. I'd rather have bloody Oliver Norwood at Sheffield United. Gus Hamer's way better than Ryan Yates. So I don't understand how he gets in our team, because he makes us inevitably worse. He does. I know, like Reece said, against the bigger teams, he's fantastic because he's a nuisance, but that's because we don't have the ball. Yesterday we had loads of the ball and he's not capable, but he gets a loving because he's come through the academy. Let me tell you that. He's from Lincoln and he's a Man United fan. Does that, like, help you anymore to hate him? Because, like, hate's a strong word. I just don't like him as a footballer. I hate him as a footballer. He's probably a really, really nice lad. But I just hate him as a footballer. I think he's terrible. I've seen lads on a Sunday morning who are way, way technically better. And that's just true.
He makes me laugh that, like, we all, I think, widely acknowledge that Jordan Henderson, for example, is the worst midfielder England have in their selection. And we all get increasingly agitated whenever he plays. And I've seen Forest fans have the same opinion. But Yates is just a poor man's Henderson. Like, that's exactly the same player. And you can't say one's great because he bleeds red and white and he's one of our own. But then a better version of him, you'd say, is, like, technically inept. Because they do exactly the same thing. And you hit the nail on the head, Adam. You said the exact same thing. Like, in a technical team, like yesterday when we had more of the ball, he cannot. If you go into a football match knowing that Forrest's going to have about 40% of the football, yeah, fine. Yates is fine for that sort of environment because all he has to do recently is play a 5-yard pass and that's it. When you've actually got to progress play, when you've actually got to try and break, like, pick a lock, like we saw it against Palace, like towards the end, like right at the end, like. We like, again, taking six touches to get a simple pass out to Williams. And at that point, it was too late to shut off. Like, he doesn't have a technical brain. That's okay. You can say that. I don't understand why that's such a big issue. But, like, you talk about Dominguez and how he changed things. Obviously, another friend of the pod, Nathan Joyce, I saw him tweet something yesterday. I just couldn't agree more of it. It was like, someone said, I'll start Yates next week. Obviously, presumably for his set piece. And he went, absolutely no chance will I start him. The idea of he starts a scrappy game and adds bite drives me mad. Dominguez not only puts a foot in, but is far more technically advanced. Someone who is on the cusp of the Argentine World Cup squad being dropped over Yates is madness. I mean, that sentence alone is, like, they literally won the tournament. And we're saying, nah, you don't bleed red and white. Sorry. Like, and then we talk about the set pieces as well. Like, we've had Yates, the set pieces is still bad. So, like, we're still conceding goals every week from set pieces with Yates in the team. It makes no odds whether he's on the pitch or not.
Yeah, against Everton, he doesn't play for me. I think we'll have more of the ball against Everton.
I'll repeat here what I said on Twitter. If we play, if Yates starts, I'm going straight to the concourse for a start. And secondly, Sacklin on the spot. Get him gone if he starts Yates next week. Enough. Reece, sorry.
I had to write down all the points because it's that many. I'll start at the top with Jordan Henderson. I mean, Jordan Henderson, this is Jordan Henderson, by the way, who's absolutely won the lot as well. And people like, and he is a similar type of player to Yates, isn't he? He's kind of a nitty-gritty player.
For Jordan Henderson, Jesus Christ.
I know, it's way, way better.
I celebrated his goal against Senegal, so. Anyway, the reason he's picked for me is because, as a manager, and this is the Gareth Southgate mantra, I think is the best way to describe it. He is probably a player who gives his all in training. He's probably the first one who turns up, the last one out. And as a manager, you look at him and think, yeah, I can trust him. I can trust him to give his all for me. And that's probably the reason why so many managers have picked him, in my opinion. My caveat to that statement is, you know, where are all these clubs then? If all these managers have picked him, where are all these clubs lining up to sign him? Because let's be fair, the only teams I've seen him been linked with since he's been at Forest was, I think it was Millwall and Borough, who are both stuck in the Championship. And there was a point when I think Newcastle were linked with him where it was if they fell out into the Championship. I know that, you know, Paul Taylor, the reporter, says, oh, there's a few Premier League clubs interested in him come end of the season. Well, without any names, we'll see. It's got to kind of, with Yates, it's kind of got to a point where I'd say it's kind of similar to Joe Worrall, where he has the odd good game in the Prem, but consistently it's just not enough. And you need to, and that's the problem at Premier League level, you need to be consistent more often than not. And you can't have one good game in every three. You just can't. Not as a centre midfielder. And, you know, and this notion, like what Nathan replied to with the Everton game. Well, he played in the Everton game at home and captained the team. And him and the rest of the team, because I'm going to be balanced, stunk the place out. Because it was an absolute disaster in that game against Everton. And Jimmy Garner, who we all absolutely adore in this pub, ran the show in midfield. And there was a load of people last season who said he ain't good enough for the Premier League. So it's just, and as well, like the set pieces, you know, the lads never scored in the Premier League.
You know, we're nearly two seasons in now, and oh yeah, he's a menace from set pieces. He's never scored from a set piece in the Premier League. So there's just narratives and notions what are just social media. It just falls, and I actually feel sorry for him in a way at times, because he is the epitome of, he is either a 10 out of 10 or a disaster. There's no middle ground. The Fulham game, for example. It was a 10 out of 10. Like, no. It just wasn't. And, you know, he did well, but he's not a 10 out of 10. Come on. It's just every week. And it gets to the point where it's like, he's taken over the mantra from Steve Cooper FC. It's Ryan Yates FC on social media some weeks. That's all people are talking about. It was the same when the team was announced yesterday. That was the main topic of conversation. And, you know, the lad's been at the club for what, several seasons now, and we're still debating whether he's good enough or not. To be honest, it's tiresome. And then, you know, when he does have his one good game in three, you get all the people who are the Yates fans are on other people's backs. And then when he has a terrible game, it's the opposite. Tired of it. And this is why I don't use social media as much anymore, because you can argue black and blue with people. You can. And I've just got better things to do with my time, to be honest. But I don't know. No, I mean, I agree. I thought Dominguez come on and did quite well personally. Well, did really well, actually. And I'd like to see him in there. But you just know for a fact that is, if Nuno does do that, Everton, and we get beat and they have a stink of a game, then the Yates fans will be like, oh, he should have never dropped Yates. I mean, Sangare, who's someone I've defended on this pod, I still think, with having seen him at PSV, still can come good for us. But as you can see, Nuno just don't want to use him. That Palace game was the straw what broke the camel's back for the season with him. And you can just see he just does not want to use him, because as soon as he makes a mistake, the crowd's going to be on his back. His confidence is low. He's apparently fasting as well, which is obviously going to be detrimental to his performance. He was. So I don't know, guys. Like we've said on this pod, we're now coming to the back end of the season. We still don't know. I've said that several times. I'll let Lee have a say now.
I think Nuno would love to use Sangare, but I don't think he wants to use him because of what happened with what the crowd did against Palace. And do you know what? I mean, people might know who I am, where I sit, this, that, and the other. There's a guy who sits just in front of us, and yesterday really, really, really boiled my absolute, we've swore on this podcast, so piss. Every pass that Sangare made against Palace, he was up, he was booing, he was throwing his arms about, get him off, do this, do that, the other. When Ryan Yates made that pass that we spoke about earlier yesterday, do you know what he did? He clapped. He clapped the player. He clapped a player who did that. I watched him clap. He clapped a player who slipped in at the opposition forward. And do you know what? It's like Reece says, it's completely tiresome. It's absolutely baffling because he bleeds red and white. Because what happened to this whole... There's a bit of a saying when it comes to Liverpool fans, they're always right, you'll never walk alone, don't they, until a player has a bad game. We're no different. Forest fans are no different. It's absolutely ridiculous. We'll always stick up for players as long as they fit the mantra of, oh, he's come through the academy. He cares just like us. It's completely redundant. We're at the level now where we should be binning that sort of sentiment. Sentiment doesn't keep you in the Premier League. Eventually, keep playing Ryan Yates, keep playing these academy players that aren't good enough, we'll get relegated. We'll get relegated and we'll probably not come back. It's difficult. It's one of those sort of things where what happened to players having to be good enough? We've got Dominguez who... Do you know what? Dominguez come in yesterday. I bet you if you Google it and you go on Twitter and this, that and the other, I bet you'll find someone... Oh, he just came on and did his job. Ryan Yates does his job and it's, oh, wow, 10 out of 10. Get him in the England squad. It's absolutely ridiculous, and Reece is absolutely spot on when he says it's tiresome. It's absolutely boring. You can't criticise him. I did to have a tweet after the Fulham game where I could probably name, and I'm not even exaggerating, five players who contributed more to that 3-0 win than Ryan Yates. Ryan Yates was good against Fulham. He was very good. There was five players who contributed more to that win, and I got tweets to me saying, oh, what about Yatesy? Yeah, okay, I've said that every player did okay. Why do I have to name him? Why do I have to name check him for doing his job? Sangare will come in, do his job. Dominguez will come in, do his job. Oh, yeah, just doing his job. It's just ridiculous. It's absolutely, it's boring. So boring.
The thing is, as well, it's just like, and then you like Lee, as you said, you're getting like fans turning, making rivalries between players. Yeah. It's the truth is as well, some Forest fans cannot accept that some other fans do not rate Ryan Yates. They cannot accept it. Look, football is a game of opinions.
Absolutely.
Right? It's a game of opinions. Everyone's got the opinion. That's why we all love it. That's why we're sat on this pod now doing it, spending our time debating, because we all love footballers, because it's addictive. But it's a game of opinions. But some fans cannot accept when others don't rate players. They've just got to, it's just how it is in football. You know, I like Adam, I prefer a technical player. I prefer something better on the eye. And there's some games where you do need Ryan Yates, i.e. Fulham second half, perfect. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just some fans just can't accept it. And this is why you kind of get it every bloody game. And it's why I don't just bother on social media.
And do you know what?
I'll be black and blue.
What I'd love to throw in for context is I don't hate Ryan Yates. Ryan Yates is the sort of bloke just because I don't think he's good enough for this team at this level, it doesn't mean I hate Ryan Yates. I think I bet he's a great bloke. I bet he's a smashing bloke. I mean, back in the day when he was coming through the ranks and I was running the line on his youth game against Aston Villa, he seemed like a smashing fella. But I just don't think he's good enough for Prem. That doesn't mean I hate him. He's one of us. Just, he bleeds red and white.
It's just another nonsense social media term. Look, I'm a fan. I invest I'm, you know, season ticket holder. I go to a lot of away games. I invest a lot of my money and time into Forest. When I'm at the ground, I want to support them players on the pitch, because at the end of the day, I'm in the business as a fan of going to the games and seeing my team win. So if Ryan Yates is part of the Forest team that has done well, I am absolutely delighted. Just because people, you know, don't rate him as a player doesn't mean they absolutely hate. I don't hate any players play for Forest. Well,
exactly.
You know, someone who's actively here in a minute, because, you know, we all, at the end of the day, we've all kind of got to be together at this stage. I was just so disappointed with, you know, the Palace reaction. I thought it was so out of order. We've kind of moved past now, but like you guys have said, that's kind of took one player out that a manager can't even play in because of that reaction when we're clearly struggling in midfield. So Danilo and Dominguez, hopefully for Sunday.
Yeah,
Christian, you gave me a grenade and we've set off an atom bomb.
I know. Well, the thing is, I haven't finished yet, sadly. The thing that concerns me is that the last two games, especially, so Spurs and Wolves, Yates has been the pre-Cooper Yates for me. And that is a huge concern, because the pre-Cooper Yates was basically a mixture of, you know, like Lee said before, Lee, 85 games or so before Cooper turned up. You can count on one hand how many of those were actually good. Like, he sort of flip-flopped between okay championship player and bottom end League One. There was no, and with the occasional random good game in between, there was no real like barometer of what you expect. And like, he's been hooked off after an hour in both games. And yet, you know, we've still got fans saying, oh, it's all right though, he bleeds red and white. Just accept that, you know, just accept that he isn't going to have a 10 out of 10 performance every game. It's like, it's just tiresome. Every single week, the same discussions. You'd be dead. Hilarious. I actually had the funniest reply I've ever had on Twitter earlier, because checked my mentions this morning, and like, obviously, because someone said, like, he said that, it's like, oh, what's the obsession with those? Blah, 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 blah. And someone replied, said, I wonder if it's a psychological thing, because like, where you see a homeboy done well and you get jealous and somebody don't praise your friends. It's like, wait, baby, I literally just burst out laughing, because like, I guarantee you, this was never said when I've hammered Turner. It was never said when I've hammered Origi. But when it's a player that they like, suddenly it's a psychological like impact issue. It's just like, you couldn't make it up with our fans, honestly. Like, the straws they will grasp to defend Ryan Yates is admirable in a sense, delusional in another. And like, it isn't helpful. Like, when he's playing crap, just say he's crap and move on. You don't have to defend every action he does. Oh, but he tied his shoes up properly. Great. Like, if that's what we're going to come down to, is it? Like, it's just, I'm just done with it. Like, I honestly, and the thing is, like, I think what concerns me the most is we're now, what, 5 more games this season? And we're still weirdly in this mindset, it feels like, for management, that we can experiment and afford to experiment. Like, we don't have our points back on the boards. We aren't 5 points clear of Luton, which we should be, but we aren't, because we end up going on a bloody splurge. Like, the honest truth of the matter is we're in a very precarious situation, and I feel that someone at the club, including someone within management, don't treat it with that urgency it requires. You cannot afford to play passionate at this level. If you've gone, I'm not going to play Sangare because the fans are going to go on his back, but equally don't play someone in his place who isn't good enough. Like, you can't have it both ways. And, oh, mess.
Let's gear up for Everton next week, guys.
Exactly. Everton preview next. And we might have a pod preview for you as well. I'm sure we can get that sorted out pretty quickly. But Reece, your prediction for Everton next week?
It looks buzzing.
Head in hands moment.
I mean, next weekend is just has the potential to be an all-timer because
El Deductico.
Because it's just, I mean, Everton are in a similar boat to us, aren't they? They've still got to play this weekend, so I'll be watching that closer tomorrow evening against Chelsea, which I actually think they'll get a result from because, as I've said before, Chelsea are just an absolute basket case of a team, aren't they? Hopefully we'll get some Stamford Bridge smashing of the stands when they score a late winner, is the hope. But Everton away, I mean, it's going to be... I mean, I think you're the only one who's not going, Lee, out of us four, is he? So it's going to be some... I think there's going to be some atmosphere for me, Christian and Adam, because it's going to be slightly toxic because it's their first home game since they've had a second deduction. You know, you know what Everton are like already because, you know, we love to laugh at them when it goes toxic on social media. So I'm expecting a raucous atmosphere, and I'm also expecting a vastly tough game because Sean Dyche is... literally a passion merchant, isn't he? So he'll have them up for it, whether or not they're good enough. I mean, the set pieces, as we mentioned earlier, is a real worry. I don't know. I mean, I mentioned your timer because if we went there and beat him with a dodgy decision or something, it would be absolutely incredible. So I'm going to go with my head because I think we've been very honest on this pod. And I know it isn't for some people and it is for others, but with honesty, because, you know, you say the truth. I know some people want a nice positive pod every week, but in my opinion, I'm not willing to do that just for the sake of positivity. I think Everton will beat us, and I think it'll be 1-0 to Everton, and it'll be a set piece, and it'll be, and I can see it just being an absolutely vastly ugly game. And it's just that set piece issue just being the cause. The game last year was vastly ugly, to be honest, the 1-1. We should have won that game, really, but we was in the end very lucky not to lose it because we sat back, didn't we? And Jordan Pickford punted a long ball over his defence. So I hope I'm wrong, but I just had a bit of a horrible feeling. But, you know, I'm going for the weekend because I love Liverpool as a city. So I'll go into it hoping, fingers crossed, we can get a result because really after yesterday, it's a must win, really. I mean, I said on the last pod it was a must not lose, but yesterday was a must win. We haven't done it, so we need to go to Everton really and win, in my opinion, which having won 3 away games since we've got promoted is going to be tough in a gritty game, but we'll have to see, won't we? I hope I'm wrong. I'll let someone else have a say.
No, that's entirely fair enough. Lee?
Yeah, can't disagree with much of that, to be fair. It will be a tough game, but I've just got a feeling if we score first against Everton, this could come back to bite me. I think we'll win because I think one thing that Everton absolutely love and they're amazing at, they'd be the world's best if it was based on this, is booing at home. I've never known a ground and a set of supporters that boo as much as Everton. If we're doing a preview, ask the Everton fan about their booing at home. I've watched games before where Everton aren't losing and they just boo at everything. Ref gives a decision, boo. It's just ridiculous. I've never known a... And I know Everton fans and I say it to them all the time. You are a world elite at booing. So, yeah, we've got to go there and kind of take the game to them and score first. But I do think... You know, Reece has made some good points. Dyche will have them up for it. It's the first home game since the second points deduction. I think it'll be a draw. I genuinely do think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be one of those sort of games where if you're a neutral, you'll sit and watch it and you'll think, why did anyone think that this would be a good game for TV? I just think it'll be that sort of game. I just think it'll be, both teams all know it's must not lose. I don't think it's must win. I really, that's probably the one thing that Reece said that I disagree with. I just don't think it's must win. It could change if Luton win on the Saturday, I suppose. But I just think there's going to be so many twists and turns with these five games. I mean, when's our appeal due? It'd be nice if we could get 2 points back or something this week, I suppose. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of them games that's pretty boring, pretty drab. I'll go for 1-1. I think we'll both score. This will clearly be from a set piece. But yeah, I just don't think it's going to be a very good game. I think it'll be like I say, neutrals will sit there and go, why am I watching this?
Because they want some old school booing on the telly.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
What about you?
This has been like a really good therapy session, guys. I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with Lee in that it's going to be one of them games like, why on earth has it been put on telly? You watch it be an absolute cracker, like Premier League peak Barclays classic, hopefully.
6-6.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take a draw, to be honest, because we're rubbish away from home. But yeah, no, I also intend to agree with Lee in the fact if we do score first, it could be a good day. I mean, Anthony Elanga, I think we missed him so badly yesterday, just to give like Doherty some food for thought in terms of someone who can run past him and leave him in his tracks, sort of thing. So having him back against Mikulenko, who is a pretty steady fullback in this division, will be key as well. Like that front four, we need to be together as much as possible, because it can be devastating when it gets going. We've seen it against Fulham, we've seen it in splits and splurts against Tottenham, and it can cause any team in this division problems. So I want to be positive and hope that we can go and win, but I think realistically a draw is probably on the cards. I'd say I'm going to go for a Desmond 2-2. Or a Jordi Osai 2-2.
Jordi Osai, yeah.
He likes to throw that one in.
I just got visions now of Jimmy Garner just firing in absolute rockets into the box. Like, it still makes me laugh that like some of our fans are like, oh, his set pieces weren't actually that great. I think he got 7 assists from corners alone, given to Herb Garner that season. And like what we'd kill for that now, like somebody can actually just like swing a ball in a sixpence in the box like Garner could, like Beckham, like us and every. And that concerns me. But for some insane reason, which is beyond any comprehension and beyond any form of logic, obviously it depends on the team. If 22 starts and forget it, this entire notion goes out the window, we'll lose 4-0. But for some reason, if a team selection is right, and I think if obviously this is all based on ifs and buts, but then of course football is in general. I agree with Lee, actually. I think if we can score first, we can do something there. I think that for the majority of Nuno's reign, what I will give him credit for, as much as I'm hardly enamoured by him or his selection or the way he's approached things, I do think there have been a lot of games where we haven't got what we've deserved. We've just fallen short in several areas for whatever reason. Like, again, yesterday we should have won. Liverpool, we should have got a point. Like, even Spurs, really, like from the first half, like we were more than good enough in that first half to walk the lead. We should have been taking the lead by half time, you know, but for, you know, very questionable VAR. I saw Madison was at it again by decapitating a Newcastle player and got away with that as well. Like, talk about England, the top Sky 6 tax. But I don't know. I think the optimist in me thinks we can win. And maybe a really dirty, like 1-0 or 2-1. We aren't going to kick a clean sheet, are we? So, dirty, dirty 2-1. Like, Sangare rocket in the 90th minute. I mean, bliss, wouldn't it? But I think the reality is, best we can hope for is probably a draw. But I've just got a feeling that away is going to go home happy next week. So, I'm optimistic. Fingers crossed.
Can I just say, if anyone sat in the seat that I had last year at Goodison Park, they won't go home happy at all, because it was awful. I was right next to this great big net and I was like 3 rows from the front. You can't see anything.
I've got a funny feeling I'm close to that net where behind the goal. Is that the net which behind the goal?
Yeah.
I'm close good to that luck. This season.
Ugh. My view is hideous. It was the worst view I've ever had at a football ground last year. So Everton have got that in their locker.
The only positives is, like I said, I'm going for the weekend. One of my favourite restaurants is in Liverpool, so I'm going there, and it's a good city, Liverpool.
Lee, that's a positive if you're watching Forest and Everton. You don't want to watch the game. We're going for the booing.
True.
Just I do agree with your Lee's point as well. The first goal could be vital, because if we was to get it, I think their crowd would turn.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree.
I also think as well, probably their result on Monday night will be vital, and probably how the Luton Brentford game goes. Hopefully Brentford probably, I'd say now, need one win and they're safe.
That's it.
So
I think these
hopefully they get it.
Yeah.
And it kicks if they do get it, it'll probably kick both of us up the arse, but us especially, because we've only just got to think of Luton at the minute, and that's it.
The final point for me on Luton, I think I was a bit worried when I looked at the remaining fixtures after the game yesterday, but now I've had a chance to kind of simmer down in that. I just think their games are actually probably better for us than people are giving them credit for, because all their home games, except for Fulham on the last day, they're not going to have anything to play for. But the other two, they probably will see that game as, right, win this one and we'll probably save Everton and Brentford. So I actually think they're favourable. They could be playing worse teams, I think. So,
but it's Wolves and West Ham away, isn't it?
Which really is West Ham are chasing Europe still.
That's it. So,
all we have to do is match their results and we stay up. That's what it comes down to. And realistically, over the last five games, we've done that. You have to remember, like, for all the doom and gloom, we've lost one out of our last five games, Forrest.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've had a point deduction and we're still above them the table. So for all the doom and gloom, it's not the end of the world. I just think, obviously, it's just frustrating we don't capitalise on what we could have done yesterday, because, you know, we should have won yesterday. Right? We know that. We've got tough games coming. Again, we know that. But I think there's enough in that team to get over the line. Even they just crawl over it with, like, blood everywhere because they just, like, forced it over. But I think there's enough there to just go over the line. But hopefully it's a nice breeze instead. It won't, because it's Forest. But hopefully we can at least put something on the next week and come away happy. But until then, we'll hopefully have a preview this week. If I can get that sorted out. But definitely have a review next week, probably on the Monday night. So until then, thank you all for listening, and come on, you Reds.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.